On personal day of business report at home, you ask each court of appeal convention claim, draw nigh and give your attention. But this court is now in session. God save the United States and this honorable court. Please proceed.
Good morning, I'm Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Hagel. To my left is Judge Mormon. We're here today in the matter of Paul Shefsky versus Nicholson, docket number 04-1001. Could counsel of both parties please note your appearance for the record?
David T. Landers, representing the appellate, Mr. Paul Shefsky.
Thank you, Ms. Landers.
Thank you,
Ms. Kransky. Are both parties ready to proceed? Each party will have 30 minutes to present their respective arguments. Mr. Landers, are you ready to proceed? And do you wish to reserve a portion of your time for
rebuttal? Yes, I do.
One clarifying matter, an order went out this morning, I believe, with regard to your Rule 30B submission denying or granting the Secretary's motion to strike. Just for clarification, that was a 2-1 order with Judge Castle dissenting.
Yeah, I received
it.
I received it by fax.
All right. Your Honor. Go ahead.
May it please Your Honor, there are two issues on appeal in this case: service connection or hearing loss, and for tinnitus. Since the latter issue is one of relative simplicity, and the parties agree that the board's denial of service connection for tinnitus should not be affirmed, I'll proceed onto the issue of service connection for hearing loss without further ado. In this regard, appellant's principal argument is that 38 CFR Section 3.385, which purports to define when hearing impairment may be considered a disability for the purpose of granting service connection, should be set aside as not in accordance with law and in excess of statutory authority. The governing statutes provide that service connection is warranted for disability resulting from disease or injury incurred in or aggravated by service. There's no statutory definition of disability. Just for the heck of it this morning, I pulled out my copy of Roget's Thesaurus and looked at disability, and I saw that actually the word was disablement. I saw that one of the synonyms for disablement just happened to be impairment. In VA's implementing regulations, Part 3 of Title 38 of the Code of Federal Regulations sets forth the rules for establishing service connection. Part 4 of Title 38 CFR, otherwise known as the rating schedule, sets forth the rules for determining the percentage rating and payment of compensation. These two sections are predicated on different statutes, the rating schedule on 38 U.S.C. 1155, whereas direct service connection under Part 3 is predicated in this case on 38 U.S.C. 1110, wartime service. The Federal Circuit in the Majid and Calaro decisions noted the existence of a disability and the degree of disability are separate elements of a claim. Those decisions listed five elements of a claim and the degree of disability and the existence of a disability were different and separate elements. The challenge regulation represents the only instance where any type of non-conduct impairment, which, as I indicated previously, appellant sees as a proxy for disability, is barred from the Part 3 arena as opposed to being rated non-compensable under Part 4. In fact, when the regulation was first proposed in 1988, it was stated in the Federal Register that service connection for impaired hearing would be established when hearing was within normal limits. Made aware by commenters that impaired hearing was not normal, the latter word was dropped from the final regulation. In appellant's opening brief at 15 to 17, appellant challenged the department's various rationales for Section 3.385. I won't repeat those arguments here, except to note that for obvious reasons, the Secretary's brief did not contest the clearly erroneous rationale that the Service Department did not test at the 6,000 frequency. Now, this is the very frequency which showed a progression for appellant's left ear from 10 decibels at exam for service, 40 decibels on audiometry during service, and 45 decibels at the completion of his 4 years of active service. High-frequency hearing loss, and I emphasize the word loss, was first diagnosed on separation exam. Hearing loss at the 6,000 frequency was again noted on the only post-service examination record by VA in June of 1999. No decibel threshold was given in the report that is in the record on appeal. Assuming for the sake of argument that the statutory scheme for establishing service connection is ambiguous, since there's no congressional definition of disability, appellant recognizes in 1990, when 3.385 was first finally promulgated, the administrator could issue appropriate regulations that reasonably interpret both the language of the statute and the intent of Congress. For the reasons stated in appellant's pleadings, at least insofar as service connection is precluded for hearing loss, even when this disability is service incurred or aggravated, and regardless of the severity of the loss, is both unreasonable and inconsistent with the proclaimed statutory scheme of veterans' benefits. In my recently filed Rule 30B letter, and this was not the letter that was subject to the Secretary's motion to strike, I invoked the Fishgold Rule, plainly cited the U.S. Supreme Court has held that legislation affecting veterans is to be liberally construed for the benefit of veterans.
I have a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
The I take it you agree that Mr. Paljewski does not meet the requirements for compensation. Is that correct?
If we're talking about compensation on Part 4, I agree, yes, right. Your Honor.
And the source of the basis of this claim, as I see it, is a Form 21-526. That's the basis for this claim. And that form is an application for compensation.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if he's applying for compensation and you concede that he is not entitled to compensation, where is the case or controversy in this case?
Well, to carry this argument to its logical extreme, service connection could never be granted for a non-compensable disability in that instance. And there are disabilities in the rating schedule are never compensable.
I understand that fact. But in this case, if the application, again, is for compensation, and you agree that he's not entitled to compensation, where is the disagreement here?
The title of the application is somewhat misleading because service connection is a conditioned precedent in most instances to compensation. Matter of fact, the statute in 38 U.S.C. 101 says compensation means a monthly payment made by the Secretary to a veteran because of a service-connected disability.
Okay. But if he's not entitled to the compensation, I understand it's a prerequisite for him to get a rating. But if he's not entitled to compensation, let me put it another way. How is Mr. Paljewski harmed by...
Should Mr. Paljewski need a hearing aid? He wants treatment for a service-connected disability. Whether your disability is service-connected or non-service-connected puts you in an entirely different category. And I have had clients who've had non-compensable bilateral hearing loss and had two hearing aids issued by VA. And under the rating schedule, one can have a rather significant hearing loss, still be non-compensable. In fact, unilateral deafness only carries a 10% rating.
Okay. So you believe that, then, that it's a prerequisite for medical treatment through these assistive aids?
it puts you in a different category as far as eligibility for medical treatment, whether you have service connection to the district, other ancillary benefits that may flow from a grant of service connection, even when compensation isn't paid.
Okay.
Isn't the real issue here, though, counsel, the secretary's authority to define what constitutes a disability?
Well, that authority is not unlimited, and this is a slippery slope. Next time, maybe the secretary will decide that if a veteran has X-ray evidence of arthritis in a major joint, say a knee or a shoulder, but no overt symptoms, no clinical manifestations, that service connection will be denied. And what's so unfortunate in cases like that is down the road, with aging and a worsening of symptoms, the veteran basically has to start from scratch all over again. He has a certain form of protection. I don't mean this in a legal sense of 10-year protection, but once service connection is granted, unless it's severed, he has it. And if the disability increases in severity, he can file a claim for increase. He doesn't have to start all over again and file a claim for service connection.
Is every hearing loss, when you have the decibel ratings on the pure tone thresholds that are provided, is that all due to a sensorineural hearing loss, a nerve system? Is it a disease?
Well, the diagnosis in service was high frequency hearing loss. And of course, I'm speaking as a layman, not a physician, but that generally connotes sensorineural hearing loss due to acoustic trauma. And one could certainly take the position that the disease or the injury, maybe injury is a better term, is acoustic trauma, and then the disability is the hearing loss or the hearing impairment that results from that acoustic trauma. The veteran has alleged acoustic trauma in this case.
Where would you draw the line on what a disability was?
Are you talking in general terms, Your Honor, or in this particular case?
Sounds like there's no dispute that the secretary can establish what the ratings are. I think that's pretty clear.
No dispute, and it's unreviewable.
So the secretary's come out with a regulation that said between 500 and 4,000, it would be considered an impairment. Where would you draw the line, and why?
Well, I certainly have a problem with where the secretary drew the line. For example, we have high frequency, we have conversational voice range, we have low frequency. The secretary decided that for purposes of granting service connection, 500 hertz would count, but it wouldn't count for determining compensation. And one can only wonder why, if 6,000 is of no significance, the service department would specifically test. It seems to me the service department would not test for some sort of potential abnormality if it would not have any effect on the performance of duty by that member. And certainly, sticking to the facts of this case, if I may, I would certainly say it is not reasonable or proper for the secretary to have ruled out a grant of service connection where the initial diagnosis of high-frequency hearing loss is at the 6,000 frequency.
If you were given service connection for that, would it automatically lead to service connection for a hearing loss in the lower levels?
Again, speaking as a layman, not a physician, but I would assume if, based on my experience at the board, if I may, we frequently, before this regulation, granted service connection, I did personally, for high-frequency hearing loss. And at least the policy of the agency at that time was once service connection was established, if it could be related, if the conversational voice range hearing loss was not due to an entirely different cause. I mean, you do have a situation such as with psychiatric disorders. A veteran simultaneously has post-traumatic stress disorder and suffers from a personality disorder. And under Mittleider, if the medics and the rating officials can't tell the difference, then you just resolve reasonable doubt and, for rating purposes, treat all the psychiatric symptoms as part and parcel of the service-connected disability. But I do find it rather ironic, as mentioned in the appellant's brief, that a member today in Baghdad who's exposed to an IED and suffers acoustic trauma, and the only clinically observable manifestations initially of that acoustic trauma, high-frequency hearing loss, that he would be denied service connection. Appellant has no argument with the denial of compensation once service connection is granted. But the regulation itself uses the word impairment, and it's difficult to imagine how an impairment cannot be a disability unless we're dealing with a congenital or developmental arena, which is not the case here.
The basis of your, as I read your brief, the basis of your argument that the regulation is ultra vires is that it is located in one part of the Code of Federal Regulations as opposed to another. Is that correct?
That's one of the arguments offered.
If it were in the correct portion of the CFR, would it be a valid exercise of the Secretary's regulatory ability?
Well, when we talk about the correct portion, we get back to my hypothesis that Part 4 deals with rating, and Part 3, the Secretary does not have unlimited authority to, in an arbitrary and capricious manner, just determine that certain disabilities are not disabilities, which is the only instance I'm aware of, and the Secretary in his brief has not come up with any other example where
If it was in Part 3, would the Secretary be appropriately exercised his authority to regulate, and would this be a proper regulation?
It's position of appellant that the Secretary does not have unlimited discretion to rule out service connection for disabilities that are not of misconduct origin or not congenital or not developmental. The intent of Congress is to compensate, first service connecting, then compensate for disabilities due to disease or injury incurred in or aggravated by service.
Well, 501 is the authority that the Secretary cites for issuing regulations. And 501A1 says the Secretary has authority to prescribe all rules and regulations which are necessary or appropriate to carry out the laws administered by the Department and are consistent with those laws, including regulations with respect to the nature and extent of proof and the evidence and method of taking and furnishing them in order to establish a right to benefits. Now, how is this regulation not consistent with that authority?
I would submit that this regulation has nothing to do with the type of proof or type of evidence. It just arbitrarily states that unless you have a certain degree of hearing loss in specified frequencies, you're just out of luck.
Why isn't that a proof of disability that fails? The individual fails to meet the proof of the disability.
I'm not sure if I really understand the question, because I see what you quoted as authority for the Secretary, for example, to say that we are not going to accept lay evidence of hearing loss and it must be done by audiometry under controlled conditions, which is perfectly reasonable, as opposed to the old days when we had whispered and spoken voice tests. Someone dropped a coin, if you bent to pick it up, well, that meant your hearing was normal. Not very effective, not very scientific. We have much better, more sophisticated methods today, and the techniques even include tests to rule out malingering.
Are you done?
Yeah.
3.385, it's talking about a disability. What you're really talking about is a organic disease of the nervous system, the sensorineural hearing loss. And you're saying that at the 5,000 or 6,000 level, your client has suffered that. He's got a disease in service, and what you want is service connection for the disease. And you recognize that it may not be a disability for VA purposes, either rating or whatever, but it is an organic disease. Is that your point?
Well, I'm not recognizing that it's not a disability. That's why the regulations are being challenged. What gets a little confusing here, the statute 1110, which doesn't use the word service connection, unfortunately, you're not service connecting technically the disease or injury. Technically, what you're service connecting is a disability resulting, because someone could have a disease or injury in service. It could be acute and transitory. Separation exam, nothing shown 20 years later.
But even in 1110, it's specifically tied to will be paid. And it's routine, well known, that VA will give you service connection with a 0% disability. So that's not really 1110, because 1110 talks about being paid. So you're really talking about getting service connection for the disease, establishing it now while the evidence is here today.
Right. And which would confer treatment eligibility, et cetera, and other benefits apart from compensation.
Right. If you're service-connected for something, do you have a higher standard in getting into care than somebody who's not service-connected for something?
You're in a better category, a higher category, if the disability is service-connected.
Okay. You have a minute.
I see my warning light.
Let me ask you a question here, counsel. I think you've conceded that the secretary has the authority to regulate in this general area, at least. And the standard for our review of the appropriateness of the secretary's exercise of that authority is what, in your argument?
Well, this would be a de novo review by the court of the board decision, since we're dealing with a question of law.
Now, what about the question of the authority of the secretary to regulate? Isn't our standard for review of that whether or not he's appropriately regulated,
well,
arbitrary and capricious standard?
In Haas, a recent decision that had to do with Agent Orange diseases and whether it was necessary to set one foot on the ground and within the boundaries of Vietnam, a regulation was found wanting by this court and in other instances. And I find that the analysis, should I stop talking on my time?
Finish the question, please.
I find that the analysis, my review of the cases indicates the analysis varies case to case as when a regulation is struck down as far as such matters as whether there's ambiguity in the regulation or the statute or whether plain meaning and whether the statute's directly contrary or the regulation directly contrary to the plain meaning.
But you're asserting to us that the secretary was without authority to write this definition of disability in this way and put it in this segment of the secretary's regulations.
Yes.
And what I'm looking for is some level of detail as to what standard the secretary has violated here that would take this regulation outside, otherwise due Chevron deference, as I understand the law.
Well, Chevron deference just will take the secretary so far. It obviously didn't carry the day for the secretary in the Haas case. And in other cases I cited in my brief, the secretary cannot just arbitrarily and capriciously take an impairment and decide he's not going to call it a disability, especially when you have a medical diagnosis. There's no other instance that I'm aware of the secretary has done this.
That's it. Thank you. Ms. Krensky.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Your Honors, service connection is provided for a current disability due to disease or injury occurred during active service. The secretary argues that in this case, appellant does not have a current disability. We assert the VA promulgated a permissible regulation defining disability due to hearing impairment. Appellant does not argue, nor has he shown, that his high-frequency hearing loss is a disability. The first point that I'd like to address, Your Honors, is that 3.385 is a permissible regulation. First, I'd just like to say the Secretary believes that the court is not permitted to set aside the Secretary's regulation unless it is arbitrary, capricious, or manifestly contrary to the statute. This was the holding in Chevron, and it's also very similar to 38 U.S.C. 7161A3A, which provides the standard of review, which says that the regulation should be reviewed as to whether it's arbitrary, capricious, and abuse of discretion, or otherwise not in accordance with the law. Furthermore, Your Honors, the Secretary argues that 3.385 is a permissible regulation implementing 38 U.S.C. 1110 because Congress did not define the term disabled in the statute. It left a gap for the agency to fill. And VA is specifically authorized to fill this gap under 38 U.S.C. 501A. Your Honors, the Secretary also... I'm sorry, did you have a question, Your Honors?
No.
Oh, sorry.
You'll know when I have a question.
Okay. Excuse me. Your Honors, the Secretary also feels that this case is very similar to Terry v. Principi, where the Federal Circuit upheld VA's prohibition of service connection and compensation for refractive error of the eye under 38 CFR 3.303C. Following the procedures provided in Chevron, the Federal Circuit asked whether Congress had directly spoken to the question at issue. They looked at 1110, just as we're looking at it today, and they found that the statute did not define the terms disease or injury in that case. So, as well, the court in that case found that that Congress had left a gap to be filled by the agency. Subsequently, the Terry Court asked whether VA's interpretation was based on a permissible construction of the statute, and the standard for determining this is arbitrary and capricious. The court noted, "We give substantial deference to the statutory interpretation of an agency authorized to administer a statute." Furthermore, Your Honors, there is significant evidence that 3.385 is not arbitrary, capricious, or manifestly contrary to the statute. First, although appellant has said in his reply brief that there's no requirement that a condition be compensable before a service connection is granted, there is, however, a requirement that the condition be a disability. And although he cites Allen v. Brown in his brief, which distinguishes disability from disease, appellant actually conflates the two. He argues that service connection should be granted even though there is no disability. And if Your Honors will look at the June 1999 VA examination that the veteran underwent, he was in fact diagnosed with normal hearing, even though he had mild hearing loss for the left ear at high frequencies. Appellant seems to be arguing that any deviation from the ideal hearing, let alone normal hearing, should be considered a disability.
What's the Secretary's position with regard to the significance of putting this provision in Part 3 versus putting it in Part 4, a similar provision in Part 4 of the Secretary's regulations?
Well, Your Honors, Part 3 does allow for definition of what is a disability. Just as in Terry in 3.303, they said that a refractive eye error would not be a disability. So I'm not really sure what the problem is there. Within Part 3, we've said other disabilities, other conditions are not disabilities, personality disorders, refractive eye error, to provide a couple of examples. I think the problem here is looking at high-frequency hearing loss as a severity of hearing loss rather than the nature of the hearing loss. And if you look at the reasoning that the Secretary has provided in the Federal Register, this particular kind of hearing loss at the higher frequencies is one where it is complicated by the aging process or other etiologies, such as otoxic drugs. So this is a natural process of aging rather than something that's a noise-induced hearing loss that we compensate for.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. With
Certainly.
Regard to refractive eye disease and other items, other conditions that really, I think from the beginning, are determined to be sort of congenital defects or developmental defects. Isn't this situation a little bit different? Let me ask you first, do you agree that there was a demonstrated decrease in hearing during Mr. Paljewski's service?
I do agree, okay. Your Honor.
So there is this demonstrated decrease in hearing. It just doesn't rise to the level where he's going to be paid, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, although I wouldn't say that it doesn't rise to the level because, again, I think that this is specifically addressing the nature of it rather than the severity of it.
Well, but he could come back later and say, hey, my hearing's gotten worse, and he could be tested, and it would, you know, reach this, you know, magic level.
Certainly.
And he could get compensation, correct?
That's correct, yes.
So isn't this decrease during service a very significant thing in that latter determination?
Well, Your Honor, if I may address the first point that you made, how this might be different from some of the other definitions of disability within 3.303, That's certainly the case, but I don't think that the law states that that VA always has to use the same reasoning. I think that the standard of review just says that the agency has to examine the relevant data and articulate a satisfactory explanation for its actions. It must establish a rational connection between the facts found and the choice made. So in this case, I think that, that the Secretary has laid out, or VA has laid out, several rational reasons within the Federal Register. And the fact that it's different from maybe some of the other conditions listed in 3.303 does not mean that, that these are any less reasonable reasons for the regulation.
With regard to those rational reasons laid out in the Federal Register, isn't one of them wrong?
I'm sorry, which one, Your Honor?
The one that says that the services don't measure at the 6,000 decibel rate.
I don't believe that it's wrong, Your Honor. I believe that even though this particular veteran does have audiograms that measure at the 6,000 and 8,000.
Doesn't that indicate that that's in error then?
Well, I don't believe that it indicates that that was the policy of VA at the time. I believe that this was the information before VA at the time, and quite possibly today. I don't think that it means that this was the policy that we measured audiograms at the 6,000 and 8,000 hertz level.
But specifically, my recollection, and I can't turn to it right now, is that in the Federal Register there was a statement made that the services do not measure in that area. And yet, in this veteran's case, it's clear that at least one of the services does measure in that area.
Well, I think that just means that this particular veteran had an audiogram that measured at the 6,000 and 8,000 hertz level. I don't think that that means that that was the policy, Your Honor. I think we have to look at what the policy of all the services were at the time.
I have I'd like to go back to this other
yes,
area
Your
Honor. Here. I want to understand the impact on the veteran of the determination that's being made here under this regulation. One of the statements made during the appellant's argument was that a finding of service connection with a 0% disability would, number one, place the individual in a preferred position to receive medical care, and I believe he said would actually entitle him to assistive devices, hearing aids,
mm-hmm.
whereas if he were not found to be service connected, he would not receive that preferential treatment and would not be entitled to those assistive aids. Can you shed any light on that?
Well, I believe that that is correct, Your Honor, that without service connection, unless he is in a particular economic status or an indigent status, for example, I don't believe that he would be entitled to hearing aids. But I don't think, and opposing counsel could correct me, that this veteran is seeking hearing aids. I believe he's seeking compensation. Your Honor, he simply doesn't have a disability. This is a type of hearing loss that is a natural process of aging. If I may say, children have hearing up to 20,000 hertz. It doesn't mean that we should all get hearing aids.
Let me ask you another question.
Yes.
If when he came to apply for his benefits,
mm-hmm.
he filed his application, and the VA promptly scheduled a rating exam for him, and he received a rating exam, which was considered in the rating. He was denied compensation. In order to get compensation, in order to, let's say later on down the road, today, for example, he says, you know, my hearing's gotten a lot worse. Does he now not have to come in and present new and material evidence?
Yes, I believe that he does.
And if he does, is the VA obligated to assist him? In other words, are they obligated to provide him an examination, or do they not have that obligation to assist him in developing new and material evidence to reopen his claim?
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe that VA is obligated to assist him in developing new and material evidence. If he were to come up now with new and material evidence that establishes that he does have a disability under 3.385.
So he has to wait until he thinks his hearing is really, really bad before he's going to get a VA exam.
He has to wait until he has a disability, Your Honor.
Take a look at 1110 for me.
Yes, Your Honor.
I think you said that Congress limited entitlement to service connection for disease or injury to cases where there's disability. Did you say that?
For disability resulting from injury and disease, yes, Your Honor.
Where in 1110 does it limit service connection to that? I mean, I'm looking at it, and I see 1110 limiting the compensation.
That's correct, Your Honor, but that is, as I believe you mentioned, that is exactly what the veteran applied for in his application for compensation.
Right, and you can deny his compensation and still grant him service connection. You do it all the time. In fact, you have a provision in here that says you can give a 0% disability rating if it's not provided by the rating schedule. So why is VA not saying that this sensorial hearing loss is service-connected? It gets a 0% rating. It happened in service.
Again, Your Honor, because he doesn't have a disability under our regulations.
Well, what statute says that you can't give him service connection for that? You don't give him pay. You don't give him money. Well, I agree. 1110 says that. Where in the statutes or any regulation? In fact, if you go to regulation 3.303D, service connection may be granted for any disease diagnosed after discharge. There's nothing about disability in there.
Again, Your Honor, I believe that 1110 is the statute that provides...
Well, what do you say about the regulation I just read to you? 3.303D.
I believe the appellant refers to that in his brief also.
You can look at 3.303B. It also talks about disease and service connection without mentioning a disability. And I think, I don't know if we can take judicial notice, but I'll just say that it's my understanding that service connection is granted many times with 0% disability.
Well, absolutely, Your Honor, but in all of those cases, there is a disability there. What I'm saying here is that there is no disability.
So in this case, the secretary would say that if you have a little bit of arthritis, but it doesn't rise to the 10% level, you would get service connection. But if you have a little bit of hearing loss and it doesn't fall in this decibel, you won't get service connection.
Again, Your Honor, I would just say that if you look at the Federal Register, they distinguish this kind of high-frequency hearing loss, over 4,000, from the lower-frequency hearing loss because it's, in fact, not a disability.
I don't think anyone's arguing that... It's not a disability. Well, I guess counsel over here is arguing mm-hmm. it's not a disability. But in my questioning, I'm focusing on a disease. So I understand it. This is a organic disease of the nervous system, a sensorineural hearing loss. And I haven't heard anyone say he doesn't have that at the high decibel level. And the question becomes, if you have a disease incurred during service, why would that not be service-connected? He gets 0% disability. And even the regulations that we're talking about are talking about it in terms of disability. Okay, it's not yet a disability as defined by that regulation, but is it not a disease? And what precludes him from getting service connection for the disease that he has?
Well, Your Honor, I would even argue that it doesn't seem to be a disease. It just seems to be a natural progression of aging that we're talking about here, which is different from your example of arthritis.
Within the board decision here, there's been no finding as to whether or not it was a disease or old age. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So one issue might be whether it is just coming from age or related to the noise that he he was exposed to while in service.
That may be, but it's...
So let's just assume for this discussion that it's related to the noise he had in service, and it is a nervous system problem. You're saying because of some rating scale, he doesn't have a disability, and that might be fine. I go back to, if it's a disease incurred in service, what precludes service connection?
I think that according to Terry and according to 1110, that we establish service connection for a disability, not for a disease. I think that was also found in Allen. I think there's a distinction between the two. So whether or not he has a disease, according to our regulations, he does not have a disability.
The regulation that I was referring to, I misspoke, was 4.31 that the appellant talks about in his brief. And that regulation says that in every instance where the schedule does not provide 0% evaluation for a diagnostic code, a 0% evaluation shall be assigned when the requirements for a compensable evaluation are not met.
Yes.
Now, can you explain why that does not impact our decision here?
That's correct, Your Honor, but I believe in 4.31 it's also referring to a disability. I don't believe there's any requirement that we have a compensation or service connection for something that is not considered a disability.
Actually, it's referring to the schedule, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right, but we don't even, I don't believe, Your Honor, that we even get to the scheduler rating until we have established a disability.
Isn't it 4.1 that defines disability?
Again, Your Honor, I think that 4.1 refers to the ratings. I don't believe that we get to Part 4 until we've established a disability. Your Honors, I think that what appellant is talking about is saying that any deviation from a change, any change in hearing and service should be service-connected. And I'd like to go through some of the reasons that were established and provided in the Federal Register. One of them is that the reasons for the regulation. One of them is that most speech sound is concentrated between 500 hertz and 2,000 hertz.
Wait a minute. That's not a reason for it's not being service-connected. That's a reason for it not being a disability, right? If I understood you correctly, you said this is a reason for it not being service-connected. I think those are reasons for it. Are they not reasons for it not being a disability?
I believe that the reasons provided in the Federal Register are the reasons for the establishment of 3.385, which was necessary to provide a gauge of what constitutes hearing disability.
Okay. I think that's what we're talking about here, is whether or not there's a difference between service connection, whether that's an independent element here from disability. At least that's what I see as kind of the essence of what we're talking about here. So I'm sorry I interrupted you, perhaps.
Okay. I just wanted to say that the medical studies and the experts that VA has have said that when all frequencies above 4,000 are eliminated, speech recognition scores remain at 95%. That is certainly the case with this veteran because his speech recognition was 98% in the right ear and 96% in the left ear. And again, the diagnosis by the VA examiner was that his hearing was, in fact, normal. Also, the second reason provided, the 3,000 hertz, is now routinely measured and newly included in the frequencies used to calculate pure tone and air conduction average. I wanted to note that 3.385 really, in a sense, codified what had been happening according to the M21-1 since 1967. They were not looking at hearing frequencies above 4,000. So they had added 3,000 with this regulation, Your Honor. But this, it's not that this represented some sort of limitation suddenly. This is how hearing loss had been looked at by VA for many, many years. The most important reason, I think, is that frequencies above 4,000, if we considered them, then there would be an increased probability that noise-induced hearing loss would be complicated by the aging process or other etiologies, such as otoxic drugs. In other words, as I've mentioned before, this sort of hearing loss is part of the normal aging process. I've already discussed reason number four, and also reason number five, use of 4,000 hertz does not represent a change from the current procedural guidelines. Again, these are the procedural guidelines that were in M21-1.
I'm going to take you back to 3.307 then. Presumptive service connection for chronic tropical or prisoner of war with a disease. Again, it talks about for disease, not disability. And then if you turn and tie 307 into 309, you have other organic diseases of the nervous system. So once again, aren't we talking about whether you can be service connected for a disease? And if there is an organic disease of the nervous system, which is certainly one of the two things we've talked about here, either old age or the organic, and apparently that fact hasn't been established. But to just deny service connection because you don't meet the disability criteria, where is that established in any law or regulation?
Well, Your Honor, again, I would just go back to the fact that his application was for compensation, so I do believe that the governing statute in this case is 1110. I'm not sure which other statute would be the one that we should be looking at today.
Are compensation and service connection a unitary concept?
No, Your Honor.
So, can somebody make an application to the VA in order to have their disability service connected and not seek compensation?
If it's for the purpose of some sort of health care, which I believe would be the case in this situation, I believe opposing counsel.
So if in this case, Mr. Paljewski file an application for health care.
Mm-hmm. For hearing aids.
Easy 1010 or whatever the form is. And that's all I want to know. I want health care. Would there be a finding that he was either service connected or not service connected and no determination with regard to compensation?
I think in that case that it would have to be returned to the board. I don't know what their finding would be.
Whether it was old age or a nervous system problem that occurred in service.
Right. Well, I think that, I mean, in this case, he did apply for compensation, so I don't know what the result would be if he had applied for some other benefit.
So then is it your position then that this is a denial of an application for compensation and may or may not be preclusive with regard to a finding for, if in fact an application was made, so that the finding could be narrowed to compensation, service connection? In other words, because this is a finding for compensation, he doesn't meet the requirements for compensation, that doesn't necessarily preclude a finding of service connection.
Well, I think that service connection is tied to 1110.
Well, do you think that this is a denial of service connection? This finding by the board is a denial of service connection? Is that the Secretary's position?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. Well, I mean, the board did deny service connection.
In that case, if he applied for medical benefits right now, he would fall into Category 7 or 8 or whatever, not Category 1. Is that correct?
That is correct. I believe under Chapter 17, he would...
Then this is a very significant finding then.
Certainly, Your Honor.
And since he applied for compensation, why didn't they just deny his compensation instead of denying him total service connection?
I think, Your Honor, because he does not have a disability in this case under our regulations.
You got 3 more minutes.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to ask another question. Well, again, I would just like to go back to the point that in this case the standard of review is whether the regulation is arbitrary, capricious, and abuse of discretion, or otherwise not in accordance with the law. I think given the Secretary, that the VA has provided several reasons, and given that it's quite clear that appellant does not actually have a disability, that in this case the regulation is a permissible promulgation of the statute. And also, I would add that there's no need in this case to remand for another examination, because an examination is only necessary if there is competent evidence that a claimant has a current disability or persistent or recurrent symptoms of a disability. Here, there's no competent evidence of a disability. That is all, Your Honors.
Thank you. How much time was reserved?
10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Pardon me if I jump around a bit, a few points I wanted to make in rebuttal. Excuse me. First of all, old man Palchevsky was all of 20 years old when he entered service. I'm not really sure why the Secretary is talking about hearing loss due to aging. This regulation is the only regulation that denies service connection based on the severity of the impairment. The Terry case, which was distinguished in appellant's brief, is inapposite. Terry had to do with congenital or developmental disorders, familial disorders, and no one is contending that the sensorineural or high-frequency hearing loss is congenital or developmental. I reviewed the record at 23 and 55. Those are the exams for entrance and separation from service. This was not just some whim of the examiner to test at 6,000. If you examine the form, the numbers are written in the form, but obviously the service department didn't feel 8,000 was pertinent because there was a hole or an X or some mark through that, but 6,000 was specifically tested. And I submit the service department doesn't test without a good reason for testing. The aging argument, this could be brought out with any disability. Someone might have arthritis due to trauma and also arthritis due to aging. That's why we have rating specialists to sort all this out. I'm particularly distressed by the Secretary's position, and pardon me if I'm misquoting, I know I'm paraphrasing, but basically telling Mr. Palchevsky wait till he has a disability. There's somewhat circular reasoning here. How does he know when he has a disability, or is he supposed to go out on his own expense and just keep getting his hearing tested until he comes up with results that might satisfy VA? And finally,
let me ask you a question. Yes. Right there. Doesn't every veteran have an obligation to demonstrate a current disability when he seeks service connection?
That is one of the elements, but there's also a duty to assist, and Pollan suggested in the brief here that in view of the time that has lapsed and the fact that the examiner who conducted the audiometry did not have access to the claims folder, that an alternative to immediately ruling on 3.385 would be to give the veteran another exam. Quite a few years have elapsed, and we might have an entirely different situation. And under Hensley, if there's a current disability in the sense of the 3.385 definition, and there's evidence of hearing loss in service, service connection be granted, even though the hearing loss in service did not meet the 3.385 definition. I'm sorry if I ramble a bit. Did I answer your question, Your Honor?
Yes, you did. Thank you. Raise another question,
okay.
However, with regard to Hensley. And I'm not sure that I understood what you were saying with regard to the characterization of Hensley, so maybe you could go back through that for me.
As I understand Hensley, and I'd be happy to have someone correct me if I'm misreading it, but my reading of Hensley is that if a veteran exhibits defective hearing, hearing impairment, hearing loss in service, and either it is first noted in service or if pre-existing was aggravated, even though that hearing loss in service does not meet the 3.385 standards, if the veteran currently has hearing loss which meets the 3.385 standards and is a nexus between the current hearing loss and the hearing loss and service connection can be granted. That's my reading of Hensley in any event.
Thank you. Wouldn't that argue for waiting until there is a hearing loss that would fall within the Secretary's definition?
Well, it seems to me,
since
this is supposed to be a pro-claimant system, the preferable course of action here, if the court wants to obtain additional evidence, is to invoke the duty to assist, which the Secretary refuses to invoke in this case, and call the veteran in for another exam. He'd be happy to report for.
Well, let's assume the results are the same, and within the definition of 3.385, he does not meet a disability. As you just described Hensley, and I'll just accept it for right now, it sounded to me like that you would have evidence of an in-service hearing loss. It is in the record. It's established. But you don't rise to the level of disability. And the way you described Hensley, perhaps the time to come back is when it does rise to the level of a disability as established here. You still have all the facts that he had some hearing loss in service.
Well, a veteran is definitely disadvantaged if he has to wait and go out and periodically get audiometry, and he's denied now, and as one of the panel members pointed out, then it's a matter of having to reopen new and material evidence and start all over again. And it seems to me that the Supreme Court in Fishgold and Gardner made it quite clear that legislation affecting veterans' benefits should be liberally construed for the benefit of veterans and not parsimoniously interpreted just to save the public fisc. I noticed in
But if you go back to the statutes, what if the Secretary came out and said, we'll never give a 0% disability rating, we'll only start at 10%, and anybody who has a disability that is rated at less than 10% has no service connection or anything?
Well, for openers, you'd have to do something about Section 4.31, which states that even if a non-compensable rating is not provided for a specific diagnostic code, it's
right.
There.
So basically, he shot down range. It's already done.
Pardon me?
Never mind.
Okay.
that's just an Army term. It's already he's already taken the position that a zero you can get service connection with 0% disability.
Right. I'm a living example of that, so.
Right.
And I have treatment eligibility.
Let me ask you another question that spins off Hensley since we got into that. With regard to Ledford, Hensley, and Heuer, how is this court supposed to interpret those prior decisions of this court with regard to 3.385?
I'm not sure if I really understand the question.
Well, you know, in those, I would say that an argument could be made that those cases stand for the proposition that there's nothing wrong with 3.385 and that it was applied in those cases. Now, it's been changed since, at least in as to Ledford and Hensley. You know, how do you suggest that this court deal with those cases? Which are panel decisions precedential for this court.
Well, if I understand your question correctly, I believe this was dealt with in appellant's reply brief in the example of Ellis Smith, where there were numerous, I realize Ellis Smith is still being litigated, but there was a reversal by this court. There were numerous decisions prior to Ellis Smith that said that according to the rating schedule, a 1 10% rating was the maximum under diagnostic code, I think it's 6260, for tinnitus, be it unilateral or bilateral. Until Ellis Smith, that regulation was not directly challenged in the same case with, I think the sites that you gave me, Your Honor, are ones where 3.385 came into play, but that was a regulation which was lawful until declared unlawful. And in those cases, I don't believe the validity of 3.385 is challenged. To the best of my knowledge, this case with Mr. Polshevsky is the first instance where the validity of this regulation has been directly challenged in the sense of a case or controversy. I don't want to say anything more. I'll probably get in trouble. Are there any more questions?
Anything, Judge?
No.
Do you have any? Then let's terminate.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is submitted for consideration. The court will now come down to greet counsel.